Hey there, Sean.
Hey, Pierce. How's it going?
It's pretty okay.
All right. That means it's time for another episode of the It's Pretty Okay podcast. Let's do it.
Let's start the show.
Disbelief when they're gone. Grifted for the prize, young and gifted. Sifted through the grey for a taste of danger. Got washed away on a way stranger wave. See a fairer way to discount the nature. Counting coffins, shaft your pallbearers. All's fair in all areas. If you're
all right there when I'm all in, I'll see. We're coming back. We've survived the company retreat, shall we say. Survived a Korean barbecue trip without any visits to the burn ward, despite having multiple first timers. So that was great. And we're my incessant coughing aside, I think are, you know, refreshed and excited to get into it. Emily and I were just talking before we started recording about plans for tomorrow night. And I kind of had a wild hair that I maybe wanted to go see a movie. Because I have been bombarded on all of my various social media and web platforms with trailers for Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I started watching a trailer, and it was at a moment where I didn't really want to be scared because I'm a little sensitive to that.
Fair enough. But that, you know, kind of had movies on the brain, which makes, Pierce, what you brought us for this week, I think, quite fitting.
Yeah, so in anticipation for our retreat to the West Coast, Los Angeles specifically, been reading things that have been tangentially related to that city and the Southland, as I think they call it. They don't call it that anymore, but I was reading James Ellroy novels, and I've read two this year. The most recent one was L.A. Confidential. Great book if you're into kind of the neo-noir thing. It is very dark, very eerie. The crimes in it are heinous, but there's this tremendous character development and layer upon layer of plot in how the characters interact, and it all kind of unfolds and then refolds together in a great way. I also know that there is a movie based, and I'm using that very loosely, based on the book, and I watched that movie last night. And I knew going into it that there's no way you could capture everything like that and not have it be like a 4-hour movie. But I found myself very troubled because while the movie was great, apparently it was one of the first times American audiences got familiar with Russell Crowe. So that's important. This you know, taut, physical, burly guy, perfectly cast. So the movie was really good, but I was so distracted the whole time by seeing characters and plot lines cut away, cut away, cut away. And I was left at the end with this question, which is, am I putting too much stock in the book and that the movie has to follow the book or it's a failure? Or do I really need to step back and say, these are different works. They might be related, but they don't need to be the same. Yes, Max.
Well, I have a clarifying question to start.
Yeah, you just posed an either or that is not contradictory. Like they're not opposing things.
Well, I think usually let me say it differently. I usually expect there. I think typically there's this expectation, and the saying kind of goes is like, oh, the book's better than the movie. And I think a lot of that for me comes from this idea that the movie is not good unless it follows the source material exactly, which I will add parenthetically is impossible because they are different
yeah.
terms of art. But am I, do like, is there a better way to think about it? Because I am used to that, which is one must match the other. But I think in this instance, I might have been limiting myself by being boxed in that way. But Max, you were going to say something.
I mean, my initial question was how long was the movie? 2:15. I know I've been on rants recently that, yeah, so the movie should not be any longer than that. It should arguably be shorter. And yeah. So right off the bat, I'd say, you know, when you're reading a book, you can follow along with all these kind of less important characters to a degree because mm-hmm. you're reading, so you don't lose track of characters. But like, it reminds me, I don't know, I don't watch a ton of movies based on books, but I remember watching Game of Thrones, and it's like, if you watch Game of Thrones without reading the books, you have no idea what's going on.
Yeah,
because there's too many characters. So
that's correct.
My gut reaction is
I can confirm
all that stuff. It doesn't fit. It's a different type of art, and it doesn't. My gut reaction is it doesn't work.
Well, and with Game of Thrones, also in that example, the books are about like they skip the battles in the books, and the TV show is like all about the battles. So like, you know, they clearly made a good call in that regard because those are some of the better episodes. Yeah. And then later they kind of just would take two characters in the book and like make one character made up plot line out of them. And, you know, I think people got upset when, and the show became bad when I think it wasn't just that they were cutting stuff and then they had to kind of, you know, they made up the ending because the books are still not out and still will not ever come out. But, I think at first, even though they were doing things differently than the books, like emphasizing the battles and stuff, they were still going along with like the themes of the book in the show. And then kind of at the end, it is not the themes of the show. And that's like where it kind of went wrong. It wasn't that it wasn't following the book. It's just like, it wasn't representing what the book series is about either.
I think one thing that comes up for me, especially, and that's a great example, especially down to the battles. In a book, you can write the characters and you can give all this background and we can know what they are thinking in a way that you can't in a show. But you have to worry about what it looks like and the mechanics of a battle and the impacts there and what that can build. That can be great. And why waste all your time in a book about, well, how an arrow goes? It's like, oh, stick a camera on that. That's all of a sudden great television. I will say where these kind of come together, speaking of LA books, and there's a book called The Long Goodbye, which is a Raymond Chandler book, mm-hmm. and it has Elliot Gould in it. And I watched it a little bit ago. And it's an instance where they take an aspect of the book and try to put it in a movie, which is the internal dialogue of Elliot Gould's character.
Mm-hmm.
So he is talking to himself audibly through much of the movie, and there is one scene early on where I'm like, either I'm gonna get it or I'm gonna go crazy. He's walking down an aisle late at night looking to buy cat food, and he is talking to himself about the cat food options. And in a book, if that's just going on in your head, it's like, that's, I'm used to that, that's normal. But you see it in a movie and it's like, all right, this is exactly like the book, but I hate it. This is weird. I don't need this type of, not even voiceover, like audible talking to yourself. So there are things that I recognize you can't do in one, but you can do in the other. But, you know, to go back to the Game of Thrones bit, and then Kevin, you might be wanting, bring up Three Body Problem. But I do think that where I get hung up is when you take liberties with things like plot, because TV shows are better. But when you have 2 hours and 30 minutes to cram it in, you could Scorsese it and just go full Killers of the Flower Moon. But that's really hard to get all the plot in there.
Well,
and it makes it too long.
I feel like the book is better than the movie is a thing said by the kind of snobs who brag about not having TVs. Because the purpose of these differing art forms is different. A movie, a TV show, it's meant to grab your attention and hold it for a while. And a good, well, a good novel in particular, but generally like a good book, but especially really well done fiction, is like immersing you in a world. And there's an element of that. Like you can't do that without all the exposition and setting up the world itself. And so you have to spend time that in a visual medium is not attention grabbing. And so like, of course it is better if the thing you are looking for is an immersive experience where you feel like you lived what was happening along with the characters. But that's not like, you're not going to tell me that even a good novel, there's no novel that could possibly ever be as good as a Fast and the Furious movie is at doing what a Fast and the Furious movie is supposed to do, which is glue your eyeballs open like you are in A Clockwork Orange and hold them there for an hour and 45 minutes while you watch Fast Car go vroom, explodey thing blow up.
Family.
Exactly.
Ludicrous.
Terrible music cue at the end as they remind you yet again that Paul Walker is dead.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. Like you're not going to make a book version of Fast and the Furious. And
well, they made a million books of the Halo franchise.
But they weren't the, I forget which came first. But they're, I mean, the video game. I don't know.
But that's also different because a video game is something that you are spending a lot of time with. And there is more of an ability to deliver that sort of immersive thing where you're not an observer like you are an observer of a movie, of like what happens in a movie. You are a participant. And so like that, I mean, I don't know how good it's really possible for a Halo book to be, but for me, it's less because of that inherent problem of like these are divergent, you know, forms of entertainment that seek to do different things.
Yeah. So the thing I realized with Halo, Kevin, I think that's fine. You're like, why would you have all these books? But also when you are playing the game, not just Sean's point about you invest a lot of time in it, but you do inhabit a character. So if something is written from the perspective of the character or the character's community, I could see that. I'm sure that could be similarly compelling. And that comes to this other thing that I was thinking about is I'm watching LA Confidential and the spirit of the book, which writing, you have a different palette to use than you do with the movie, than you do with the TV show. The spirit of the book was there. And that was really cool to see. That was very enjoyable to see. Danny DeVito does voiceover through the movie, and that just works really well. He plays this skeezy tabloid writer, and it's perfect. That was the spirit of the movie, and you didn't necessarily get that with the character in the book, but you realize, oh, this is the perfect mouthpiece. I think where I'm getting hung up, and I should think about that, is going back to the spirit is one thing, but what about the plot of the book is the truth and the only truth. And I can't see past that. And I don't know. I think that's maybe a little unfair. On the flip side, I watched Oppenheimer. Max, I know you watched Oppenheimer. You all might have seen it. I am interested in going back and reading the book that it's based off of and another book about the development of the atomic weapons, just because I think it's very compelling. But also in the movie, you have the scene where Florence Pugh's character is, if you look closely, is has her head put underwater and is actually drowned by someone else as opposed to drowning, you know, taking her own life. That may not be in the book. That might be a movie thing that's added. Is that compelling? Yes. But that's an instance where it's like, well, you know, does it matter what the source material is? I don't, that's not what I'm there, but it would be interesting to see what the spirit of the book was and see if that was captured in the movie. Like I would go back and check that out.
Yeah. When you say source material, I mean, how much of it do you think is which one you consume first versus which one is created first? I mean, there's not that many books based on movies, but there are some for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you know, is canon whatever is created first, how much of it is swayed, I think, by... I know for me, it's like, if I see the movie first, then I'm a little more open to the book being different because the movie is my baseline. And so mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, there's a new character. It's not like, oh, they took away a character. It's like, oh, there's more stuff to enjoy.
It's personal to you as opposed to their... I mean, of course, everyone will yell, canon, but it is... You're saying it's kind of personal to you and your order of operations.
I'm saying with two different questions, I think, but it could be.
I'm glad you brought that up because for me, generally speaking, I sort of operate in the mode that, like, if I watch a movie that is based on a book first, I am fairly likely to, like, not really care to go back and read the book after. But there has been one notable recent exception, which is the movie American Fiction. So that movie is based on a novel called Erasure by the author Percival Everett, and the summary is a black author, well-respected black author who publishes scholarly type works, gets offended by someone, by a black author who writes a kind of dumbed down vernacular English novel about people in the hood, and decides, you know, after seeing that book become sort of a cultural darling among white readers and critics, decides that he's going to sort of satirize the whole thing and write an even more pandering and silly book. Only that book becomes a smash hit. Excuse me. I went to see the movie, which got a lot of awards buzz, and I believe won Best Adapted Screenplay, if I remember correctly. And after seeing the movie, I happened upon a number of reviews that were extremely critical of the movie and said specifically that the choices that the writer and director made of where to depart from the book were really notable and really lost a lot of the meaning that's present in the book in an attempt to do some of the same kind of pandering that the book criticizes. And so, like, I have purchased the book and intend to read it soon because I'm really curious about that. But that's like,
and
I don't know, that's very much an exception rather than a rule for me.
Yeah. And when that happens, and I did this same thing last night, when there is this disagreement between movie and book, my inclination is to go and see, okay, what did the author, what did the person who created this work, what did they say about it? And I think that leads, and maybe that's right, maybe that's wrong, but that leads back to, I think, maybe the prime example of this. I have watched the movie The Shining. I have never read the book, but famously, Stephen King does not like the movie, and he does not like the liberties Stanley Kubrick took with it. But I trust Stanley Kubrick a whole lot, and he made a phenomenal movie that does, you know, endless YouTube rabbit holes to go down with that. And so that comes back to, maybe it's okay if the movie is better. Though I have read Percival Everett before, and I would be deferential to him, but that's my inclination. That does not mean it's right.
Yeah. Can I offer you an unsatisfying possibility? What if it doesn't matter?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
no, there, I need
there doesn't have to be one definitive thing. I mean, it's a piece of art. The whole ball game is the, you know, the interplay between the creator and the audience and the differing ways that you might perceive and interpret something based on who you are and what you bring to your experience with the work.
Yeah. We have not. Oh, go ahead, Kevin.
Sorry. Well, it kind of was going to kind of answers the question that I've been having. And Pierce, you mentioned the three body problem earlier. And like, that is a trilogy of books that I read a couple of years ago. It is one of my favorite book trilogies of science fiction out there. And I have basically no interest in the show, and I wonder if, like, if I like the books that much, and if the writer of the books, like, worked with the makers of the show. Does, like, I don't know if I have any, like, obligation feels like the wrong word, but, like, should I feel like I should care about the show, but I just don't. I'll probably watch it at some point, but
I think there's something really nice sometimes when you go, that was plenty. Like, you choose not to eat anymore. They say, oh, we've got something really special tonight, you might like it. It's okay. You know, you've wowed me. I've had enough. And I think knowing when you've had enough can be good. I kind of have this little bit with, there is a Star Wars movie floating out there, the ninth one, that I'm just never going to watch because I liked the eighth movie, and I don't need any more. I'm fine. I am content. Let other people argue about that. And I think we have gone this far and we have not mentioned Harry Potter.
I was wondering when we were going to get there.
So recently the actress who played Professor Sprout, got in hot water because she was on some late night show and said, like, all these fans, like, get really worked up around me and everything all the time. And, like, it's a children's book. Like, I thought you would grow out of it. And of course, everybody came online and was really mad.
Wait till she learns about Disney adults.
Oh, that poor woman.
But like, it's there too. It's like there's all this other stuff, and sometimes you go, you know, I've had enough. Maybe the books and a couple movies were enough for me, and I think that honestly that's healthy in some ways, because getting obsessed over it and finding another thing to get angry about, because even if you like it, someone's going to be angry about it. I think that's healthy from you, Kevin.
Yeah, well, I think I guess that what's hard for me is there are some things where I read and I'm like, oh, I want to see this. I want to see, like, what Hogwarts looks like, and I want to see what the magic spells in the air look like. And even with Lord, I mean, Lord of the Rings, I saw the movies first, but I could I could read that and say, I want to see this. I don't want to see the Bombadil stuff, but, you know, I want to see this other stuff. And, you know, they did that right. But
that's an opinion. That is not an opinion held by everyone here. But yeah.
But just with you know, the three body problem I'm talking about, like, it just it doesn't seem like something I want to see. It's, I think a lot of the character of the book comes from the fact that it's a Chinese author, and I've never really read a Chinese author before. And, you know, the writers of the show, he's helping, but it's like, you know, the Game of Thrones guys, it's like, yeah, I don't know, I feel like it's impossible.
He's helping
to really,
by getting paid a bunch.
Yeah, it's probably gonna be hard to, like, you know, bring that culture through. So, you know, I think it's a combination of, yeah, like, you know, had my fill, but also it just doesn't really, I don't read it and say, oh, I need to see this. It's more of like a thought experiment book.
Yeah.
I thought the Harry Potter movies were good. I think when I first watched them, I was a super teenage fanboy of them. And so I was like, was super critical of the movies every time one came out. But then like 5 years later, I watched them like, oh, they had a tough task. And I thought they did a pretty good job.
It is.
And a tough task that gets like exponentially harder as you get further into the series.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you're stuck with for the most part, the good actor, the actors that you got nailed, and the actors and actresses that you didn't nail.
And the fact that I don't know what the total number of directors was. It was at least three, maybe four. But you have like, you had all these different directors, and you know, you have Prisoner of Azkaban, which if you go watch it on your own, you'll be like, that's a phenomenal movie, and it's Inarritu, and like that did a Harry Potter movie, and like the weirdest, darkest one, and it was awesome. But the fact that you had all these different directors and there's still this continuity and excellence is four directors. Yeah. That's where
Star Wars got into trouble. Also,
Alfonso Cuarón, not Inarritu.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I apologize to both wonderful directors. I guess I just thought that because there's some weird darkness going on.
That's big of you, but important because they both surely listen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they should, because I know they wrestle with us all the time, and their thoughts are really, really welcome. But
they preferred the book version of our podcast better.
Yeah. It's just so different than like, oh, there's a showrunner and there's this one person who puts everything. And you, Kevin, you were mentioning Star Wars, so it's like, ah, oh, we're gonna do J.J. Abrams, right? And that's who was the honcho for all of it. It's like, nice job, buddy. You really kicked yourself in the head, and then the other foot hit you in the teeth. So good job out there. Stick to Star Trek, man.
All right. Anybody got parting thoughts that you want to make sure we hit?
I never saw the Ender's Game movie. I feel like I don't want to.
I think you're okay there.
I think that sounds about right. Okay. On that note, let's wrap that up and move on to Pierce Asari. What do you have for us this week?
So we've talked before about what you can wear to concerts and also basketball games, and
on many occasions.
They're kind of inverses of each other, where it's like you go to a basketball game and you wear a jersey of a player you like that is playing in the game. That's great. You go to a concert, unless you are in a metal band, you shouldn't wear the garb of the group you're seeing. That is my belief. I have written about it. I've talked about it. So I was wearing my beloved Burial sweatshirt at a local establishment recently. And they have a pretty good tap list. And they had a Burial beer. And it's a Burial beer that I like. And the first round was like, I've had this somewhat recently. I don't need it. And the second round, I go and I order it in the sweatshirt. And I felt really guilty about that. And I apologize for both my awkwardness, because then I talked about the fact that I was wearing a sweatshirt from Burial. But also it came up because the person was there was like talking about local stuff. So it came up.
Incredible.
But it really felt like the same thing, which is like, hey, if you're being a fanboy, don't triple down on it and like draw attention to yourself. So I apologize for making the poor bartender feel awkward as I, you know, Burial squared it there. Though Manuals is wonderful, they have wonderful staff, and Burial is obviously a favorite. So kudos to all of them for dealing with me.
All right. I think I have a big idea from pop culture for you this week. You know what? Yes, I do. Been heavy lately in the sort of indie rock that's heavily influenced by 90s alternative game. And so two favorites the album Blondshell by Blondshell, and make sure I get this name right. The artist is Liquid Mike, the band, and the record is called Paul Bunyan's Slingshot.
Nice.
Yeah. That one in particular is a quick listen. I think it's only like 25 minutes, and it's 12 or 13 songs. So that's, you know, that's good for a short commute or a quick morning walk. We'll get you brisk and braced for the day.
Quick, Max, you're in a Madison, Wisconsin bar, and someone hands you a Paul Bunyan Slingshot Shooter. What is in it?
Probably, oh, I don't know. Maple syrup.
Okay.
Jägermeister.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
Ooh. Yeah. Maybe replace the vodka with Everclear.
Maybe. It's a bar. They're not going to have that in a bar.
Yeah, you're in Wisconsin, so maybe there's some beer in it. Maybe it's a drop. Maybe you drop it in. That's the slingshot.
Yeah. Either. That's it.
Like a Schlitz or something.
Mm,
yeah, I feel like there should be something like something that is not normally a drinking thing that goes in there. I know mayonnaise
maybe
goes in a
lot. Maybe you just drop a shot of maple syrup into a beer.
I think it's you know what it is? It's a half maple, half Jaeger shooter, and you drop it in a pint of whole milk.
With a little bit of blue curacao, maybe?
Oh, for blue. Yeah.
We'll work on it.
Imagine putting blue curacao
how to milk,
you fucking monsters.
Gross.
All right. To wash the awful taste of that out of our mouths, Kevin, do you have a Jeopardy question for us?
I do. The the category was 2010's Oscar winners. This black man won Best Supporting Actor twice in that decade, both for films that won Best Picture. So, Max, you were came in last, so you get to reveal your answer first. What did you come up with?
I am in dead last. I wagered 100 points, and I guessed Michael Jordan. Michael B. Jordan.
Right. Won it for every Creed film. No, that is incorrect. Sean, you were in the middle, so what did you come up with?
I wagered a very confident 100 points and gave the correct answer, which is Mahershala Ali.
Yes, for the movies Moonlight and Green Book, much to Pierce's chagrin.
Yeah.
Pierce, did you come up with the right answer?
No, I did not. I guessed Chiwetel Ejiofor, who only has one Oscar nomination for 12 Years a Slave and did not even win, which I knew, but I had a block in my mind. I knew Green Book existed and Mahershala Ali was in it, but refused to believe that it won the Best Picture Oscar that year. I don't know who it was up against, but not our strongest.
Well, Pierce, I believe you still have a 2-point lead overall.
Yeah.
So that 2 points that everyone was making fun of you before at the beginning.
Wow. Yeah, it's getting tight. It's getting tight. All right. That is the end of the show. You can find us at our home on the web, www.prettyokpod.com. I am coughing enough that you don't need to hear the rest of the words. You've heard them before. We'll be back next week to talk about something else. Until then, I'm Sean.
I'm Pierce.
I'm Max.
I'm Kevin.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Welcome.